Good morning, everybody. On October 21st, 2020, my name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio today. Thanks so much for being with us. We've got NAESP here today, the National Association of Elementary School Principals. We've got their president all the way speaking to us from Cordova, Tennessee. Okay, that's Kimbrell Barboza Lewis. She'll be with us in a second, along with special guest. I'm bringing him on, the executive director of NAESP, Earl Franks, who's just a great guy, and you'll meet them both in just a couple of seconds. Let me do a little homework before we go further. We're going to archive this show at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. We hope you as an educator in pre-K-12 will go over there and join with us. Of course, it's free. You'll see our magazine over there, which is called Equity in Access, which you'll be very impressed with, and I hope you are as impressed as we think you're going to be. You'll see a big icon for podcasts as well, and that's for all the podcasts that we do over here at Education Talk Radio, which is fully a part of ace-ed.org these days. Okay, so you can check it all out, but your voice is important in the fight for equity, all right? And we're trying to create a place where educators can speak out and get all the information we can on equity and really create solutions to the situation. So it's over again at ace-ed.org. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, okay, you can do that over at EduTalk Radio. Or you can do it at Access, the number two, Access to Equity ED, all right? And LinkedIn is my name, Larry Jacobs, and Facebook is Larry Jacobs and Education Talk Radio. But that's enough of me babbling here. Let's bring on the National Association of Elementary School Principals. Ladies first, as always. Kimbrell, are you there?
I'm here. Good
Hi,
morning.
Kimbrell. Good morning to you. Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Indeed, my pleasure. I hope it's the first of many visits, for goodness sakes. And now we go to the famous trumpet player, band leader from Alabama, the one and only, okay, the one and only, Earl Franks. All right, hi, Earl.
Hi, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here with you and certainly NAESP President, the Kimbrell Barboza Lewis, and I'm just excited to be a part of this group.
Well, you do a great job as executive director of the organization, and you deserve a lot of kudos, especially these crazy days, okay? And how important elementary school education is beyond belief. We're going to talk all about that with you and Kimbrell today. I want to talk to Kimbrell. This is cool. Did you have an officership in the Tennessee Principals Association? Were you an officer there?
I did. Yes, I was. Prior to being on the NAESP board, I was on the Tennessee Principals Association board.
I wow.
served as secretary and vice president, president-elect, and then became a board member for NAESP. That is where my roots are. The Tennessee Principals Association is on the ground working on behalf of principals and in partnership with NAESP as a joint state. So, yes, that's where I began.
Well, are you working your way towards the White House? Do we need a Kimbrell campaign poster for 2024? We're barely done 2020,
no.
for goodness sakes. Okay?
No.
I can see this happening.
No, there's a resounding no on it. There are people more qualified for that I will support.
I don't know. Or I know you got Earl's vote. You probably have my vote by the end of this, okay? Earl, as Kimbrell decides whether she wants to run for the presidency, literally, of the United States in 2024, I want you to tell us about NAESP. You're the executive director. Earl Franks.
Yeah, we're really proud as an organization of what we're providing to the field at this time. Many coronavirus resources that we've rolled out to folks in the field and trying to support principals and the work they do every day for the students that they serve. And now with this important issue of race and equity, which has always been a big deal in AESP, and we'll talk about that more in a minute, and Kimbrell's leadership back with the Diversity Task Force back in 2017, but what's culminated into this National Task Force on Race and Equity. But a lot of good things going on here, and then still continuing to advocate on Capitol Hill for an additional funding bill because we know that reopening schools keeping students and faculty and staff safe is critically important, but that requires resources. And so we're very hopeful that something will happen here in the next week or so to give us a second stimulus bill to help schools who
yes.
are really in school districts that are hurting now.
Yeah, and I was talking to my wife about that and a friend yesterday. You know, the politics of this, okay, I don't care Republican or Democrat, the politics of this is making me crazy. We need resources, okay, period, end of discussion, and not just for education. It's enough with the blabbermouths in Washington taking sides. They got to work to cross that aisle, work together, and get it done for the people. Okay, and that's all there is to it. And I'll tell you, education, taxes, there's an economic crisis along with COVID. Taxes are going to be troublesome to get paid this year. That's what we depend on for schools. We need the resources of the feds to move right in there. That's my little speech for today, okay, about the blabbermouths down in Washington. Let's get some work done, okay, and all that sort of thing. You know, it's interesting. And, Kimbrell, I don't know, I have to say this because we're going to talk about it. You are an African-American woman, all right? And as such, you're not only a great female leader, you also represent, okay, a racial category there, which I think is very important. And I think that has great impact on what we're trying to do with equity, okay, in both gender and race. Okay, you're a shining example, if I may, of what we need to look to. And just talk about that role of being a African-American woman in a leadership role now in this wonderful national role. You're really a tremendous example. Please talk about that.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome. I mean that sincerely. It's great.
Thank you. It's something I don't take lightly. You know, as an educator, the majority of teachers in the field are women, especially
yep.
where I live. However, the majority
everywhere.
Of leaders
everywhere.
Are not.
Everywhere.
Yes. The majority of leaders are not. I do live in the Memphis area, and so the majority of the population is African American, but there
mm-hmm.
is quite a distortion in equity and needs being met and social and economic status of African Americans in our city and in our country. So as an African American female leader, I know what it means to see both sides of people who struggle, people who are considered different just because of the color of their skin.
Yeah.
And it's important to represent what the needs are and speak as a voice for those who look like me and those who also are women. And women, of course, know how to manage many, many things.
Yeah, women
and
look like you too, by the way. Well, you not only look like African American,
right.
Women look like you too. I just want to make
right.
that point. Yeah.
Me
yeah.
too. Yeah.
yeah.
But it's a balance. You know, it's a balance
yeah.
of being able to manage and also have compassion and have understanding and move beyond where we may have come from or the initial thoughts of our area or even nationally. We have to understand that we want our systems to not just get results, but get results for everyone. And the opportunities that NESP provides for women and also
yep.
diverse leaders is impactful. And I'm very thankful for that, that when I get to travel again and when I do get to travel across the country, that I do recognize leaders that are of diverse backgrounds, that are of color, that are women, partnering with other leaders across the country. And I'm very thankful for that. It's definitely
yeah.
needed, especially during
without
this time.
Question. Without question, especially these days. I mean, we all know what's
especially
going on out there. And, you know, I have to say, okay, and I'll get back to you in a second, Earl, but I just want to say it's impactful in on two levels, okay? Level A, all right, is that it impacts other educators, if I may, female educators, and in this case we could say African-American educators as well, to become leaders in their schools,
mm-hmm.
okay? That's what you're encouraging, mm-hmm. all right? But it also
mm-hmm.
encourages
yeah.
the kids, okay? The
yeah.
kids C, a female, and B, an African-American person leading the school, in this case, leading the national organization. And that, and although they don't see you leading the national organization, quite obviously, but they see you leading a school, okay? And that makes a huge difference, and especially, if I may, on the little girls. All right, I just think it's so darn important. I hate to put you up on a pedestal, but you really are. Okay, and I know you're a hardworking lady. That's not that kind of pedestal. You know what I mean. But you really serve as a wonderful example for this, and it serves on two levels. And just talk about that for a second. The impact not only on females in the profession, but also just on the kids.
I was one of those little girls. I was one of those little girls, and of course, in elementary school, I had a male principal, but in middle school, I had a female principal, a black female principal who was very strong.
Really? Well,
she was very strong. Wow. Made
that's
a big difference
cool.
in it was pretty cool. Made a big difference in education locally. But I also remember teacher leaders because, as you know, a child growing up in the 70s and 80s. And I graduated in the 90s from high school. Teacher leaders were very important to me. I still have relationships with some of those teacher leaders that were my teachers. And I remember all that they did. I grew up in a mostly African-American community to emphasize the importance of your history and the changes that you can make within your community and the world. And so I want so much for those little girls and young men. I'm a parent myself, and I think about what can I do to help students do the very best they can. They have so many challenges right now, learning from home, those with disabilities, those who have diverse backgrounds. What can I do to support teachers to support them? Because that changed my life.
Yeah,
and so that's what I want to help.
And you're going to do it. It's great. What is your term? When did your term begin? Was it last summer that it would have begun?
So as president, I began this summer, so August 1st.
Oh,
so I have a 1 year term.
Of course, this summer, right? This summer, August.
Yes.
I lost track of years there. Okay, for some reason, I'm thinking of years.
We're all kind of stuck in one place.
Yes,
my term began this August.
Sorry. Yeah, so you're August to August. So your presidency will began in August. It'll end in August 2021.
Yes, it'll end at the end of July, and then the president-elect. So I began as a board member on the board in 2015, and then ran for vice president. So you're vice president, then president-elect, then president.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Then you're going to be immediate past president, then president emeritus. It never ends. It never ends. I want you to know that.
It will not end.
Then president
to be
emeritus.
A member and work.
President emeritus. It just goes like that. Okay, there are thousands of people in line with offices. It never ends. Okay, Earl, talk about what Kimbrell talked about, and you see this again. You've seen this over the years. Okay, you've been NAES president. What, about 5-6 years now, right, Earl?
I'm in my fourth year as executive director.
That was close.
Yeah,
I was close. Okay, so. As you look at this, okay, what do you see when you first walked in that door, and what do you see now? What has changed in regarding, because I want to get into this national task force you folks have on race and equity, all right? And so what is it? What have you seen? What are the changes? What was it then? What is it now? Just from your point of view, the perch of executive director of NAESP.
Well, I think first you can see why Kimbrell is our president. I mean, she's a shining star of representation of our members and those and principals in the field. But no, I think really what's highlighted, if you go back to the senseless death of George Floyd, before, well, let me go back to 2017, and Kimbrell can talk about the diversity task force, which NAESP formed back in 2016 or so. And then we had a publication that resulted from their work, which was on culturally responsive leadership. And but really, recently, with the senseless death of George Floyd,
Yep.
And the long history of police violence against other African Americans, I think that just raised the bar of what we need to do as a national organization in support of elementary and middle-level principals to ensure equity and attend
yep.
to the social and emotional needs of the students that they serve.
Yep.
And so we started in late June. We formed this National Task Force on Race and Equity. And, you know, the purpose of that group is to collect information and provide information back to the NAESP staff related
right.
to racial equity in school communities, reveal schools' common challenges and solutions, and then support a peer-to-peer network of support for school leaders around race and equity. And so, again, we started that group. It has 12 members, very diverse group from all over the United States, working together to try to provide best practices, recommendations, and resources for the principal profession to advance racial equity in the principal profession as well as in our
mm-hmm.
schools.
Okay, that's good. So really what we're trying to do is, let me ask you, are we trying to create I have to say it this way, a demographic balance, okay, between the number of kids who represent various ethnic groups and have that reflect itself in school leadership nationally? Is that what we're trying to do, Kimbrell? Does that make sense what I said?
What we're trying to do is recognize that exists, that, you know, there are multitudes of cultures in our schools and a lack of equity within our country for those of color. And so when we examine our schools, as Earl and I have talked about, they're microcosms of our community. And so with the Racial and Equity Task Force, you have 12 members from around the country that represent schools in their zones, their states, who have a voice to share and resources to share on what's happening and how we can address what's happening. What do principals need? What are principals seeing in their communities, in their schools, when it comes to racial inequity? And how can we make changes? Because, you know, people from my mother's generation and even from my generation really felt, as African-Americans and those of us who come from diverse backgrounds, education is life-changing. Education is an opportunity to perhaps have what you couldn't have many, many years ago. However, with recent occurrences being documented showing that there are places that we still need to change, there's so much growth that still needs to happen in our country. And this task force wants to help principals address that. And so we want to reflect, our members of the task force reflect the voices of principals across the country in trying to address
mm-hmm.
the racial inequity and provide tools for them and resources for them and partnerships for them.
That is terrific, and I want to talk to you about some of those resources. You heard me say at the beginning of the show, both of you, that we have our American Consortium for Equity in Education, which you are both welcome to join, I hope you do, at ace-ed.org. We welcome certainly your voices and the voices of all our many, many, many listeners that we have today, ace-ed.org, all right? And what we're trying to do is create solutions. We all know the problems, and we all know the challenges, and we talk about those endlessly, all right? But we have to, instead of talking about it, we have to create the solutions that make sense and are doable, okay? Not pie-in-the-sky stuff, but stuff that really can happen. So on that note, okay, let me, Kimbrell, I'll stay with you on this, okay? People of color, how do we get more people of color to think about becoming principals? It's hard enough to get people, any people, into the education field, okay, these days. Okay, mm-hmm. We all know that. The cohorts at education schools are fairly low these days. Okay, so we need quality people, but then we've got to encourage people of color, if I may, and also gender, I want to say that too, all right, to become principals. How do we, what are your thoughts? And I can ask Earl. I'll give it to you, Kimbrell, if you want. If you want, you can pass the tough questions to my friend Earl. Okay. What are we doing? Okay, to encourage folks.
Yeah. What I would say is, when you think about
all the tough questions can go to Earl. I'll ask you just the easy ones. You're so nice.
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
You know, when you think about the generation that is in college now. I'm a mom of a first year college student.
Oh, congrats.
His voice is really, thanks, thank you. He's down there in Alabama where I was from. He's at Auburn. So
okay.
I want to say that.
Wait a minute, wait, there's a, could be a problem there. Earl, you're from Alabama. Alabama or Auburn, Earl, before we go further. Earl.
Larry, oh, you know, I'm a Troy way. University person, so I support Auburn and Alabama. I'm neutral in that.
He's welcome
there
back in the state by all people, ladies and gentlemen. It usually splits your popularity in half. Okay, so your son goes to Auburn. Good school, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, but when I think about my son and I think about, you know, his colleagues, their voice is really unique. What I find is that the majority, really respect diversity and use their voice to share their views in a way that even goes beyond my generation, Generation X.
Yeah.
We have to recognize that though that's in a different way, it's so effective. And so we have to find ways to partner with those up-and-coming college students, with those who are graduating, because the field of education has changed, is changing, but we need them to help it stay current. And to recognize that nothing can stay as it was. Education has always been flexible. I think it's the view from the outside. So we have to bring them inside to see, and we have to join with them to see their part of what they're doing. How does that impact education? How can that help the education field? It definitely can. And so, you know, the teacher shortage began with those who were entering the field in the early 2000s, late 90s. And so we have to look at the people who are in school now and how we can partner with them. There are, I think, more and more partnerships with undergrad education departments. They've changed their curriculum. Even the school where I attended in undergrad, you know, they have a more their methods approach is more hands-on. They want there are students to have more time in the schools, and in this case, even in virtual learning, as opposed to it being only about the methods course. So we have to think of new ways to involve them, because that's who we need in this field.
Yeah, we really do. Okay, it's really something. This task force you made, who's on this task force that you folks have, or your membership?
Yes,
Kimberly.
So our task force is definitely composed of the members of NESP. So we have nine zones in NESP, and they are composed of states. So there's a representative from each of those zones. So each region, each area in the country has a representative on the task force. They're principals and leaders in schools. And also then we have two members who are from the NESP board, myself, Dr. Franks, and then we have the support of the NESP staff on the task force. So those are the members of the task force.
It's good, yeah, and you feel it's a good cross-representation, et cetera. I think this is really important. I want to ask you a question. Earl, I'm going to nail you on this one. We call this your group the National Task Force on Race and Equity. All right, and this is a big question out there. How do you define equity, Earl, if I may? What are you looking to do, Earl?
Well, I think it's making sure everyone has the opportunity and the resources that they need. Some people need more. You know, folks in poverty may need more to have an equitable situation. I know this, going back to your prior question, kind of builds on this one, but if you look at approximately 80% of principals and 80% of teachers are white, while the majority of students are racial minorities. So thinking about, many of us went into teaching because we were influenced by a teacher that we had. So trying to get more teachers from racial minorities, the teachers of color, black, whatever the case may be in our schools, I think is critically important. And for us as an organization, because we know principals, research says, are among the most trusted professionals, if we can help them advance culturally responsive teaching and learning, which includes not only welcoming diversity in the classroom, but also teaching students how to navigate this increasingly racially, ethnically, socioeconomically diverse society. To again, build on equity, to provide resources to give, you know, students a fair shot of whatever that looks like. You know, you've probably seen the graphic where, you know, it depends on the size of the box a student needs to stand to look over the fence.
Yeah.
You know, so if we give them all the box at the same height, well, some need a little bit more. So that's what my definition of equity is, providing what's needed, and some need more.
And where, and Earl, let me stay with you, and I agree with you, by the way, okay? So where do you think we are? If we're trying to get to 100%, where are we now on that quest?
100% in specific to what, Larry?
Well, just in terms of equity, giving every kid what they need. And you can take that any way you want, in reality, in mindset, in resources, et cetera. Where do you think we are now? Okay, are we 20%? Yeah.
You know, boy, that's just like almost I'd be guessing a shot in the dark.
Yeah.
I don't know what the percentage is now. I do know this. Obviously, you know, money can't make up for everything, but certainly it helps if you need resources. Whether it's adding staff, whether it's adding, you know, faculty, support services. So resources certainly help. But going back and first realizing as a school leader that you need to work with your faculties and staff to advance culturally responsive teaching and learning. So I think it starts there in the classroom to get those who are actually teaching the students to even realize every student may not need.
That's a great point to start. Just on that scale, where people are teaching students to be culturally responsive and all that sort of thing, where do you think we are now? Are we at 20% along the way? Are we 80% along the way? How do you think we're doing? And I know it's anecdotal.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, okay, 50%. You know, I'm just going to throw that out there, 50%.
Yeah, okay, 50%. That's good. Kimbrell, what do you think?
I don't know if I can put a percentage on it. I can say that we have a long way to go. I think that it begins with recognizing within yourself or, you know, what your biases are, what biases exist in your school. And those are conversations that need to be had. That's where it starts.
You know, that is
And Larry, let me interject here. One of the things the task force, you know, they've identified guiding priorities. And so we put them in three big bucket areas. But the baseline for us as a task force and organization, the first of next month, we'll be releasing to our members an implicit bias assessment. We've contracted with Project Implicit to provide this assessment for our members so they can take a look at themselves. As Kimbrell said, it starts with the individual
leader. Definitely look in the mirror.
So, yeah. Let's let them look at this reflection on race and implicit bias to have that conversation with the principals and their faculty and staffs to identify biases that exist.
Yeah. It's so amazing. And, you know, this has been a horrible year in terms of the pandemic and certainly in terms of social justice. Let's just start with George Floyd, okay, that disaster, okay, and other people, Breonna Taylor, et cetera, all right? But as horrible as that is, I want to make that point. But we have to say that also opened up a door. And it's making us look at ourselves, I think, better than we ever have before. All right, and when we say that we can, all of a sudden we're asking people, what biases do you? That's a real step in the right direction. All right, that's progress, and I hate to have the death of so many people be the rationale for that, but boy, it is really, it's an amazing step that we're finally looking at this. Kimbrell, what are your thoughts on that? I have a feeling I might know.
I think that, you know, the recent deaths of African Americans that are very public and very well known are extremely tragic. and it becomes very personal for those of color.
Oh, yeah.
You are now aware of what you face. You are even more aware of what you face every day and the risks that you face every day and that your students and staff face every day. And
yeah,
so
and actually,
I have
to say, I'm just going to jump on that for a second and say, so are white people all of a sudden. There's a lot of people who say, oh, my God, how have people lived like this for so long? What have we done?
Yes.
I mean, there's a self-reflecting thing. It goes beyond just being African-American. When you saw the look of that police officer with the George Floyd murder, okay, it was beyond belief. Okay, it was beyond belief. And, yeah, just go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, that's
actually,
okay.
I did mean to interrupt.
So the question,
I did mean to interrupt, but you know what I was trying to do there, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The question becomes, what can I do about it? What can I do about it? And not just living in fear, not living in disbelief, but what has to change and how can I help change it? And as school leaders, it starts with us and it starts with our schools. And so when you talk about racial bias and what the task force is going to release as far as that racial bias survey and questionnaire, the next step becomes, okay, I know what my bias are. I know, you know, within our staff, they now know what their bias are. So what do we do about it? And so that's the next step. That's the important part. Once you examine it, what can we do? And that's what NASP is looking at. Here are some tools to use to start looking at changing your school, where those gaps are, which impacts your community, which, of course, impacts our country.
Yep. Yep. And we have to do it. It's just, it's amazing. And, you know, on top of that, I have to just change this subject for a second. First, before I say that, tell me about Cordova Elementary School, where you're the principal. You're still the principal there, Kimbrel?
I am. I'm the principal.
Congratulations. Tell us about your school. I'm just curious about this. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So Cordova is a suburb of Memphis. Memphis is a very unique city as far as the school system. We have a school system that is for the entire county, which is Shelby County, and there's a lot of history behind what happened in Memphis and in the school system. But Cordova is a school in a suburb of Memphis, but in the Shelby County School District.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there are about 745 students. We are working remotely. All students are working remotely. It's a pre-K through 5 school, and also an extremely diverse school. So it's about 70% African American, but we also have students from countries all over the world. It is very much a reflection of Memphis, and
a reflection, I hope, of the whole country. Okay, I got to tell you, that's nice. 70% very diverse. I love that. The question I wanted to ask you. Okay, we had the social justice situation. I'll just use George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Okay, as those two examples. Ahmaud Arbery is another one, but we're not going to mention everyone's name right now. Okay, but then you had the kids break off school because of COVID. All right. So you have 70% African American kids. They all watch TV, and some of them are fourth, fifth graders. Okay, they're not unaware of what's going on. Then their world fell apart when school had a shutdown on November 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how has that changed? Those two things, put them both together, the two horrors of 2020, okay, put them together, and how was that changed? And when you started in September, what were the results of that, the impact, et cetera?
So we started in the spring addressing all of the concerns, all of the things that we know our kids are getting to see and getting to know. We went to remote learning back in March. And so we continue to be remote. But what we
did. Did I
began
say November 13th?
Was...
I meant March 13th. If I said November, I apologize. I meant March.
No problem.
I got my months mixed up today. I'm really going wacky today. Yeah.
So we really knew that it was important to have social emotional learning for our students. We'd already begun. We have a behavior specialist at our school who actually is of a counseling background. And so we began to have, even remotely, lessons with the students on social emotional needs are how to talk about it. Each week we began to do kind of a chat where each of our teachers, our would be exploratories, but our teachers from art, music, PE, began to do lessons with students every week. The assistant principals and I would introduce the lesson, talk about it, and give them an opportunity to have an outlet because they were at home. And in March, learning was not as structured as it is now. Teachers were doing lessons, but we were in a very unknown time. But you have to give students the tools and the opportunity to talk about what's happening because mm-hmm. there is so much that internally is going on. They're dealing with a pandemic, and they're seeing people die because of the color of their skin. And so you want to let them know that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to feel the way that they feel. And, you know, teachers' jobs have changed so much that is an important part of teachers and leaders' jobs.
Yeah, it is just brutal, and it's got to be tough. You know, you're supposed to educate kids, but we have to make them aware of the real world they're entering and put this all into perspective. It's just a brutal, brutal time out there, and I just respect educators so much for the work that they are doing right now. It's just it's incredible. Okay, Earl, you still there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what are you hearing? You know, I think it's a tougher situation. I'm not sure of this. Because African-American kids had the COVID plus this great fear. What are you hearing in terms of just across the whole spectrum of elementary school education about just dealing with this year with COVID and of course, with social justice? And you have some communities where there's no black person there. No, very few people of color. Okay, but they still see this stuff on TV. You have to deal with it as an educator. What have you been seeing or hearing, Earl, just nationally, anecdotally?
Well, I think very similar to the COVID-19 and reopening, I think it depends on where you are.
Yep.
You know, there's so much diversity across the country in terms of the pandemic, and we've seen – you know, many schools that started back full time and then they had to go back to remote learning. Some are hybrid.
Yeah.
I talked to NAESP past president just a couple of days ago. They have three different groups. One group they do Monday, Tuesday, then nothing on Wednesday, and then another group Thursday and Friday, and then another remote. But there's no easy answer, Larry, for this because I mentioned earlier, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
That's right.
Certain school districts, half the parents want their kids in school. The other half are very afraid, and they want to continue remote. So there's just so many variables related to this pandemic. But getting back to the equity piece, I think it's important because we live in such a diverse society that principals – I believe are recognizing what's going on, and we're, as Kimbrell said, we're just trying to arm them with resources that will help them educate their students about these topics and what needs to happen as a society to improve, you know, living conditions for all.
You know, I got to tell you, you guys are working so hard to make this happen, Kimbrell, Earl. You're real. I really appreciate. I can speak for everybody. I really appreciate the good works you're doing. I mean, I really do. You're really taking this by the horns and grabbed it and are trying to make a change. And gee, I just really respect that. I thank you both. I've got to leave in a minute, but I just wanted to say that to you. Okay, thank you both, Kimbrell. Good luck. We'll talk more. I'll get you. I'll get you on the show more often. How's that?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been really great to talk to you and to get to share.
Well, it's my pleasure, and we love hearing the words and the good works of what NAESP is doing. Earl, I'll be back to you, my friend, okay?
Thank you, Larry, for the opportunity to talk about NAESP and promote our important work.
Yeah, it is important work because I'll tell you, the elementary schools laid a foundation for all this. Okay, I can't tell you how important it is, and he's nuts. Always important, but even more so now. Keep it up, guys, and please, both of you, stay safe. Okay, thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. From NAESP, NAESP.org, National Association of Elementary School Principals, at Kimbrell Barbosa Lewis, who is the president of National Association of Elementary School Principals and their executive director, the great Earl Franks. Okay, what can I tell you? All right, we'll archive over at ace-ed.org. join our consortium. What can I say? You just heard the reasons why. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.